Here's a question. What do Google, Disney, and the church have in common? Answer. They're all on mission. Google says that its mission is to make the world's information universally accessible. And they're certainly giving it a good shot. As well as Google being the most visited website in the world, amongst other things, they produce smartphones, tablets, and laptop computers. Google has almost 50,000 employees and well over £50 billion worth of assets. When it comes to achieving their mission, they're not doing too badly. Disney says that its mission is to create happiness by providing the finest in entertainment for people of all ages. And as one of the largest and best-known studios in Hollywood, they're not doing too badly either. Whether you enjoy The Merry Men and the world's best love legend, Robin Hood, or A Trip Under the Sea and Beyond Your Imagination with The Little Mermaid, there's a Disney film to make every child laugh and every adult smile. So what about the church? Because in our passage, Jesus outlines his mission for disciples, the 11 men gathered around him 2,000 years ago, and every follower of Christ since. Have a look, if you will, at verse 19. The mission of Christians, both individually and together, is to go and make disciples. You see, these words are not just meant to inspire missionaries or ministers, but they're for every disciple of Jesus in this room. Our mission has and always will be to make disciples of Christ. And when you read through the New Testament, it's not a surprise to find that the early followers of Jesus were focused on this mission. It makes total sense in light of the cross and the empty tomb. The first disciples certainly took Jesus at his word. They took him seriously and literally. But perhaps this evening the question for us is this. How are we getting on with this mission? Are we individual disciples who make disciples? Are we a church focused on multiplying followers of Christ? Or perhaps have we taken our eye off the ball? It's a big question. And I wonder whether there's a danger in our church culture that a core group of people do the work, but everybody else comes along, shows up, puts money in the offering bag, sings a couple of hymns, and then goes home. Surely we don't believe that Jesus told his early followers to make disciples, but for the 21st century church, it's a bit different. Maybe broadly speaking, there's one main reason why we don't make disciples. Perhaps we don't really believe what Jesus says here in Matthew 28. Yes, it's familiar territory, and people in and around churches know these words. Perhaps some of us could recite them backwards. But the reason we don't put them into practice, the reason we don't devote our lives to making disciples, is because perhaps we don't believe they're true. Now, nobody wants to make us feel guilty this evening, and I don't think Jesus does either. In fact, have a look down at verse 17. Matthew records that this group of disciples were split. When they saw him, when they saw Jesus, that is, they worshipped him, but some doubted. Stood before these 11 men is the risen and reigning Lord Jesus. And some of them doubted. They've seen him with their eyes. They've heard him with their ears. They've touched his scars. But some of them stand back. They're reluctant, skeptical, apprehensive. They're perhaps afraid of life without him. What should they prioritize? How are we going to persevere, Jesus? And so Jesus speaks the words of the Great Commission. And for us, as we think about making disciples, as we think about being disciples first and foremost, who then make disciples, the words that Jesus speaks here are reassuring and they're motivating. If we're not plugged in or excited about the mission of making disciples, then hopefully these words will do just that. And so we're going to look at these verses under three main headings. Here's the first one. Believe in the authority of Christ. Believe in the authority of Christ. Let me read verse 18. Then Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore go and make disciples. You see, this verse lays the foundation for the mission. Everything else is built on this truth. Not only does Jesus have unlimited power, but he has unrestricted authority. He has been given the right to rule over all people in all places for all time. His authority is universal in heaven and on earth. There's a Dutch theologian called Abraham Kuyper, I think that's how you say his name, but he famously made this statement: "There is not a square inch in the whole domain of our human existence over which Christ, who is sovereign over all, does not cry, 'Mine.' There is not a square inch in the whole domain of our human existence over which Christ, who is sovereign over all, does not cry, 'Mine.'" And this theme of universal authority comes up time and again in Matthew's gospel. In fact, it's explicitly referred to at least 10 times. His authority is emphasized again and again and again. Jesus has authority over nature. Do you remember the time when the disciples were caught in this life-threatening storm? They're drowning in water and they're drowning in their own panic. But when Jesus is woken up, he wipes the sleep from his eyes, he yawns and he says, "Be quiet." And there's silence. The wind and the waves obey his command. And Jesus has authority over sickness and disease. He touches the blind person and restores their sight. He tells the paralyzed to get up and they walk. For those suffering with leprosy, with limbs red raw, infected and oozing with pus, rotting away, Jesus touches them and within moments they're cured and clean. Jesus has authority over Satan and demons. If you read the accounts of the life of Jesus, evil spirits flee from him. They're petrified to be in his presence. They beg him for mercy. They desperately try to escape. They have no defense against his authority. And there's more. Jesus has authority over sin and over death. He's the only one who can defeat our great enemies. Sin, that evil and wickedness that lurks in all of our hearts. Our rebellious nature, that concoction of pride, anger, greed, lust, and selfishness. Jesus is the only one who can forgive our sin. And he's the only one who has conquered death, the inescapable and frightening future that awaits each of us in this room. He is the only one who has ever triumphed over the grave. And now for him to raise someone from death is like waking a little girl from their sleep. Jesus has authority. And when he says he has authority in heaven and on earth, he's not kidding. He actually means what he says here. But what's interesting in this context is it's more than just universal authority. Jesus has been given this authority for a purpose. And this is where we see the link between his authority and our mission to make disciples. You see, Jesus isn't just bragging here in Matthew 28. He's not gathered his followers together to show them one last time, to flex one more time his authority muscles. Jesus says he has universal authority because it's the foundation of our mission. What he's basically saying is this: I have universal authority at my disposal, and I'm going to use that authority to accomplish the mission I'm about to give you. Just let that soak in. Jesus has all authority in heaven and on earth, and he will use it to make disciples. You see, our success as a church and our effectiveness in making disciples isn't based on who we are or what we do. It's not about my intelligence or how many Christian books you've read. It's not about how creative I can be or how original your Bible studies are. It's not about our talents or gifts. In fact, it's nothing to do with what we have to offer. whether we're rich or poor, Oxbridge or uneducated, young or old. For all Christians, our mission is to make disciples, and our effectiveness is based on who Jesus is and what he's capable of doing. It's all about what he can do in our lives and through our lives. Let me try and illustrate. So imagine Disney has approached you. They've bought the license, the rights to Star Wars Episode 7, and they ask you to produce, be involved in producing the next film. Your mission is to create a record-breaking blockbuster, to smash all movie records. And so you're overwhelmed. It feels like a totally impossible task. There's no way you can do it. And so you approach the director and you share your concerns. And in response, what the director does is give you a list of all the resources at his disposal. He tells you that you'll have an unlimited budget and you have access to the world's best scriptwriters. You've got the most advanced special effects technology, plus the pick of any A-list actors you want. And so all of a sudden, although the job remains as huge as it ever was, you're now filled with confidence. And not just confidence, you're actually excited to be part of this project. Well, it was kind of similar for those first disciples. Except for them, it wasn't just about being involved in a short-term project to make a movie. It was about being involved in God's story for the universe. And when they were reminded about the authority of Christ, that changed everything. In fact, within a few years, these simple men were standing before some of the most powerful people in the world, accused of turning the world upside down. That's what it says in Acts 17. Believing in the authority of Christ gave them confidence that their message would save and that their mission would be a success. And we too are disciples involved in God's big story. And we too need to stake everything on the authority of Christ, his life, his death, his resurrection, his word in his world. And as we begin to believe in his authority, our mission will be energized and fueled. We'll be those who are excited to share what we learn about Jesus. We won't just read the Bible for ourselves, but we want to tell others about it. That won't necessarily mean in a formal position or with a recognized role. In fact, for anyone with children, the first place this disciple-making happens is behind closed doors. We'll develop the habit of sharing the Bible with our children. We'll talk about him as we sit at home and walk along the road, when we lie down and when we get up. We'll be those who share what we learn. And we'll also be those who share how we live. You see, disciple-making is relational. It's not about pitching up to a one-off service or to a weekly service to just absorb more information. Jesus didn't give his disciples a weekly slot to come and talk to him. He invested in them. He taught them through actions as well as his words. They were able to process what he was saying in the context of community. And it's the same for us. And because of the authority of Christ, as we seek to share what we learn and share how we live with confidence in his authority, we can know that that message will save and his mission will be a success. But before we get carried away with various practical ideas, let's look again at the words of Jesus. He's laid the foundation. Believe in the authority of Christ. But he now moves on to outline a strategy for how we're to go about making disciples. So secondly, obey the strategy of Christ. Obey the strategy of Christ. Jesus actually started training his disciples for mission way back in Matthew chapter 4. From the moment he called them, he made it clear what is at the heart of being his disciple. Let me read Matthew chapter 4 from verse 18. As Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter, and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. "Come, follow me," Jesus said, "and I will send you out to fish for people." What's at the heart of being a disciple of Jesus? following him. Jesus said, follow me. The most important component of Jesus' strategy for mission is that people follow him. That's what it means to be a disciple, to devote ourselves to following after Jesus. And so attending services, meetings and programs isn't actually what it means to be a Christian. Their purpose is to show us more of Christ, to help us follow him. And as we're walking with him, as we're enjoying who he is and what he's done, then Jesus says what will flow from that is a desire to fish for people, to make disciples. And so flick back to Matthew 28. Let me read verse 19. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. If the central command is to make disciples, it's surrounded by various other instructions about how we can do that. And there seem to be four main features that Jesus shares in his strategy. And so firstly, he says, go. Making disciples requires action, taking the initiative, putting one foot in front of the other. Nobody's going to come to us. We have to go to them. Shipley Mow is the name of the small cul-de-sac I live on in Emerson's Green. Shipley Mow, bizarre name. But I don't know what your street's like, but do you ever find that your neighbours are interested in getting to know you? Maybe it's just me. But it seems that folk don't really want to stop to chat. When people leave their house, it's almost like this duck and cover operation. They peep out the window and check the route's clear. They slip out the front door. They dash to their car and they breathe a sigh of relief. Huh, didn't have to chat to that Johnny guy next door. And even now that the sun has been shining for a few days, people in Emerson's Green come out of their houses and start washing their cars and mowing their lawns. I've actually seen people using a toothbrush to scrub their hubcaps. Anyway, it's still just as difficult to have a conversation with someone. If they're not plugged into their headphones, which is like a big do not disturb sign, when you wander over, they leave their lawnmower whirring away. It's almost like this conversation can only last for 1 minute, you know. But with this tiny word, go, Jesus is reminding us that we'll need to be proactive. It may be awkward to invite those long-term neighbours over for food, or to go out with a colleague from work, or to make the suggestion, take that first step to ask a mum at the school gate to spend time with you. Maybe in an area like Eastern, there's language barriers and cultural differences. But if we're not people who go to the nations aren't going to come knocking on our door. Jesus says, go. But secondly, Jesus says, speak. It's not explicit here in our passage, but when Jesus sent his disciples on a mini mission in chapter 10, he was clear what their job was. Proclaim this message. The kingdom of heaven has come. And here in chapter 28, it's almost implied. Obviously, you're going to carry on sharing this message. Yes, ask questions. Listen carefully to people. But when you're given the opportunity, speak. Speak about Jesus and his kingdom. And it may be a message that takes several conversations to communicate or decades to share with somebody. But making disciples doesn't happen unless people speak. Thirdly, baptize. Baptize. Now, in some churches today, baptism may not seem to be a big deal. Perhaps that's why so many Christians haven't been baptized. But according to Jesus here, and in the early days of the church, baptism was huge. It was an unmistakable act that marked somebody out as a follower of Christ. For a first century Christian, this was identifying with the death and the resurrection of him. They were publicly declaring their allegiance to Jesus. And for them, it marked them out. The hostility that would be directed at Jesus would now also come in their direction. And of course, for us, because of where we live, we don't necessarily face this same hostility. But baptism is essential to making disciples. It's a declaration that a person's life and priorities are now focused on Jesus. Baptism. But finally, teach. Jesus says, teach them to obey everything I have commanded you. Now stick with me here just for a few moments. Matthew's gospel is split into five main sections. We get a block of Jesus teaching his disciples, and then the section closes with a phrase like, when Jesus had finished saying these things. It comes at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, it comes at the end of a bunch of parables, it actually comes five times. And the last is in chapter 26, verse 1. When Jesus had finished saying all these things. It's this repeated pattern. Matthew's using it to show us the main sections of his book. But what's interesting to note is that it doesn't come at the end of chapter 28. Jesus has again pulled his disciples together. He's taken them to a top of a mountain, which is hugely significant. Mountains matter in the Bible. He teaches them. But then we don't have this concluding statement. It doesn't say when Jesus had finished saying all these things. It's not there. Matthew leaves the book open-ended. Why? Well, it seems that Matthew wants us to understand that the last chapter hasn't finished. The teaching of Jesus will continue to spread. As disciples make disciples, his teaching, his words will transform lives. Christian, do you know, if you're a Christian in this room, you're part of this story. It hasn't finished. We're part of a huge plan that God has had to make disciples of all nations. Perhaps another word for teaching here could be training. You see, again, disciple making isn't classroom based. It's not about delivering cold facts. It's about relationships. If you want to pray, what's the best way to learn? Yes, listen to teaching from the front, that's important. But what about sitting down with somebody who's been praying for years and they've been going strong? Or what if you want to read the Bible? Yes, get yourself along to the basic Bible handling course, but what about meeting with a mature believer who can show you what they've been doing for years? Or what about learning how to obey, which is what Jesus says? How do we tackle those areas of sin and struggle in our lives? Yes, reading books helps us for the fights. But what about sharing with a godly man or a godly woman in our church family? Knowing that we're not alone, knowing that people are battling alongside us, knowing that we're being prayed for and that we're loved. This makes the difference in growing as a disciple. So the strategy of Christ: go, speak, baptize, teach. Maybe we need to be people who start going or who start speaking. It could be that there are some people here who need to get baptized. Or perhaps we need to ask somebody to teach us. Or maybe we could think about someone we can draw alongside and start training. Are we disciples that will obey the strategy of Christ? But thirdly, finally, depend on the presence of Christ. Depend on the presence of Christ. A couple of weeks ago, I was at a place called Zip World. It's an adrenaline-fueled tourist attraction amongst the mountains of Snowdonia. And the site contains two specially constructed zip lines. The first takes you down to the bottom of a quarry, where you climb into this vehicle for a tour before reaching the top and zipping back down, apparently the longest and fastest zip line in Europe. And so there I was at the top, standing over this quarry, contemplating the sheer drop with rocks below, staring at this, what they called the Big Zipper. And it was at that point that the instructor said, apparently you reach speeds of up to 100 miles an hour, which wasn't comforting, actually. At that point, it felt scary. It felt daunting. But there were two reasons why I was willing to give it a go. The first reason was that I was with a 12-year-old boy. So there was no way I was going to lose face. If he was going down, then so was I. But secondly, and more importantly, I had what they called with me a flying suit. It was a harness with all sorts of straps and clips. My arms and legs were locked solidly into position. There was no way I could fall out of this piece of equipment, and there was no way this piece of equipment would fall off the line. As I launched off the side, I knew I was safe. And sure enough, within 30 seconds, my feet were back on the ground. But the reason I dared to give the big zipper a go was because of the presence of this flying suit. And as we reach the final sentence in Matthew's gospel, this is kind of what Jesus is saying. I am your flying suit. My presence means that you can dare to make disciples. It's daunting, but totally doable. Go for it, Jesus says. Have a look at verse 20. And surely I am with you always, to the very end of the age. It's an amazing promise. Jesus says that he'll be with his disciples always and forever. Jesus means that there's not a single moment when he leaves his people. He's present with all those who believe in him by his Spirit day and night. He's present with his people by his Spirit in the ups and downs. And when it comes to disciple making, Jesus is present with us at every stage. Jesus is present during that first conversation with a Muslim, and he never leaves us, even when it gets difficult. Jesus isn't just here this evening as we're together as Christians. He's with us when we're on our own, perhaps at home with an antagonistic family member. Jesus says he is with us always. He will never disappear. As we go and as we speak and as we baptize and as we teach, he is with his people for every minute of every day. And he commits to be with us until the very end of the age. Yes, there's a day when Jesus Christ will return physically. But before then, he is with us by his Spirit now, tomorrow, this coming week, until the very end of the age. In fact, if we're willing to engage in this mission to make disciples, we'll actually become all the more aware of his presence with us. Just come back with me for a moment to Zip World. When do you think I was most aware of wearing the flying suits? When did I really appreciate the fact that this was strapped onto my back? Well, it wasn't when I was sat at the bottom of the quarry in a little wooden hut. It was as I was about to be launched off the side. And I wonder whether it's the same in our Christian lives. We will become all the more aware of the presence of Christ when we step out with him on mission, when we join the Saturday morning outreach team, when we think about inviting someone to the Uncover course. That's when we'll need, and that's when we'll know that Jesus is with us. And so the mission of the church, whether we choose to accept it or not, is to go and make disciples. Why don't we resolve again, together and individually, to join in this great mission, the mission that God has for the world, trusting the authority of Christ, obeying the strategy of Christ, and depending on the presence of Christ, all to the glory of Christ.